really not.
That's awesome. That's been a long time coming. You guys deserve it. Because I know there's been some, like, okay, the projector's on, it has some color, the buttons are on, but it's not projecting anything, so...
Yeah, it's been fun. The good thing for me, and speaking of glasses, my eyes are getting bad, you know, and from the back of the room, it's hard for me to see. So with the new stuff, I can be towards the front of the room with my computer. It doesn't necessarily have to be, right in the back, plugged into that wire. So I might be towards the front for future meetings so I can see.
That's understandable. Yeah. Oh, it's 8:33, so I think if you guys want to get started, call to order. It looks like we have Zach Yenser on the call, Alexis Ryland, Joe Brammer, Erica Garcia from staff, JR, and then a super normal AI note taker. That's cool. Well, welcome everyone.
Thank you, Zach.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Call to the audience. I don't see anyone. And then the next item's administrator's report. On-street parking meter status report, parking service agent staffing levels, special events calendar, and Tom.
Thank you, Zach. I appreciate it. Regarding our on-street parking meter status report, we have no less than 213 parking meters in San Diego, California right now. They're at IPS, the provider and service provider for our meters. We've had a lot of meters go out of service, you know, over the past year. We've shipped those to San Diego to get them repaired. Not only are there repairs, but there are upgrades in the modems. We upgraded the old 2G system to 4G. Many of our meters already received that upgrade, but we still had a batch of about 100 that had to receive that upgrade. So that is happening now. We do expect those meters to be back here in Tucson in within 2 weeks. And our install team here on staff will get to work right away as soon as we get those shipments back, getting those meters back in service on the street. So as you can imagine, with that amount of meters out of service, that's the current status out there. We have no less than 213 meters out of service. We think we have more than that. We do get a report every morning showing us the current status of the meters, and many of them, you know, are in a warning state or a critical state, and that has to do with either jams or the backup battery might be bad. So when we get these repaired meters back, we're going to get those back into the field and get our parking meter in service rate increased. Working hard on that. It's quite an expensive repair bill. These returns and repairs cost between $100 to $200 a piece, depending on what's wrong with the meter. So we're working hard to get those meters back in service. And any questions on the parking meters? Okay. Moving on to parking service agent staffing levels. We currently have 6 open positions. There are 4 PSA-1 positions open. PSA is parking service agent. So that's our entry-level position. 4 of those are open. And we have 2 PSA-2 open positions. Just received word that one of our PSA-2s is moving to another department. So we have an interview scheduled for October 14th and 15th, this coming Monday and Tuesday. We have 22 candidates, I think, maybe it's 24 candidates that we will be interviewing Monday and Tuesday. So it's going to be a really long day of some interviews, 2 long days of interviews. And we hope to offer employment later that week or the following week, with start dates at the very beginning of November. So currently that's our situation. We're doing the best we can to fill those as soon as possible. We're also working with staff on looking at ways to improve retention of our parking service agents, and that could potentially include a reclassification of their title to get them to the next city job pay rate. So working on potentially increasing the pay rate. And another thing we're doing is and we've done this before, we have a temporary labor company we use, A&M is the company, and we just had a temporary worker start earlier this week on Monday. He's been on our team previously, so he has experience, so the training portion of his start will be very quick if it's not over already. So that's one way we're filling in, and we potentially will go out for another temporary worker as well. So that's the current situation with our staffing levels. We're still covering all of our patrols, our beats, our areas, just with a little less staffing. And we're trying to, staff the schedule as efficiently as possible, kind of spreading folks out. And just doing our best to get folks hired and stay on board. So that's my update on staffing levels. Oh, I see Zach. Yenser, you have your hand up.
Yes. Yeah, can you remind me what you're kind of seeing as the challenges to retention? You mentioned possibly pay, but, is it incidents on the street? Is it just being outdoors all day? Or kind of what are the factors that are making retention hard?
Yeah, absolutely. What you just mentioned is definitely two major factors. The type of work, the physical nature of the work, being outside in the elements, dealing with the public. There haven't been, to my knowledge, any recent, super sensitive situations, or altercations per se between folks. That doesn't seem to be happening. But the constant day-to-day, interactions with the public, it is usually sometimes a negative interaction, sometimes a positive interaction. One of the folks that left us last month stated the reason he left was he didn't feel the compensation was accurate for the type of work being performed. So he was referring to the physical nature of the job, the schedule, and the interactions with the public. So those are some of the challenges that we're seeing to retention. And of course, pay the pay rate. It starts at $16.60, I believe. And JR, correct me if I'm wrong there, please.
No, that's accurate.
Okay, thank you. So $16.60, it's obviously, a little low for the type of job that, and I agree with that completely. I wish we could pay them $20 an hour, but we're looking to go to the next pay rate, which is in the $18 range. And this is very premature, very preliminary. These are just brainstorming sessions we're having with our HR department and director, but the directors know that we have retention issues, and pay is definitely a big part of that. And JR, if you have any other insight into retention issues, please feel free to add on there.
Yeah, I think you pretty much hit it. It's pay for one, but it's the type of work. A lot of it's the abuse that they get from the public. The summers are brutal when they're walking downtown on bikes, stuff like that. And I just think the most of it, if the pay was better, some of that other stuff wouldn't matter as much. I think turnover is still going to happen even with more pay, but I think it'll be less turnover. People will want to stay a little bit longer in this position, but for right now, it's pretty much the pay, the type of work that we do, and the public. The public has been 15 times worse since COVID than it was pre-COVID. People seem to be, screaming, yelling at our guys more, getting in their bases, following them, threatening them. So that's a big chunk of what our turnover rate is.
Got it. Thank you. And you don't feel like that turnover or the spaces open currently, that you're saying that's not, you don't feel like that's not impacting revenue?
Let's say it does impact revenue. Citation revenue is definitely a concern with that. We are tracking that. We'll obviously give an update during the next finance subcommittee and full commission. Surprisingly, we're ahead of citation revenue. We just had a meeting earlier this week. Right now, we are ahead at this time last year. You know, 3 months into the fiscal year, we're actually ahead, which surprised me compared to last year. But that's also, you know, last year we probably had this similar retention issues, I'm guessing, around this time with the number of staff. But yeah, it definitely can affect the revenue. But we're definitely affected. We're still hitting our out of area lists and patrolling and issuing tickets. And you know, I definitely am still hearing from neighborhoods and businesses, like, you know, complaints about, you know, maybe aggressive citations and things like that. So we're definitely out there. We're making an impact. We're getting thank you emails from some neighborhoods seeing us out there. You know, as far as the operation goes, we're still taking care of business. I am concerned about the citation revenue.
Yeah, and I only ask because, like, I'm sure there's, like, a mathematical tipping point where the heartburn of looking at raising wages, there's probably, like, a point where the loss of citation revenue is, you know, above, at, or below what, you know, the P&L would look like if wages go up. I'm imagining that's probably part of the conversation is, yeah, we'll raise wages that will impact, you know, one side of the ledger, but it'll allow us to be more effective in doing the job, and that creates revenue too.
Absolutely. That's definitely something we consider. I would say this increase in citation revenue would outpace the increase in the pay rate. I think we would be safe there. It's something that we will definitely take a deeper dive in. An increase in citation revenue, I think, definitely offsets and would offset an increase in wages.
Cool. Thank you. Zach, I'll shut up now. I apologize. That was helpful information, though. Thank you.
Thank you. If there's no other questions on agent staffing, I wanted to share a couple special events, and I'm going to share my screen here. I just have a quick list. Let's see if I can get this to share. Just a quick list of upcoming special events in and around downtown that may affect Park Tucson. Trunk or Treat at the City State Garage is occurring October 19th. Tucson Police Department's heavily involved in that, and it's a great event. Jose Gomez on our team is going to be there, and he's helping coordinate for that event. So it's going to be free parking, you know, unfortunately, but fortunately for the attendees at the City State Garage that day. And then just going down the list, Night for the Living is October 26th. Ciclovia starts in downtown October 27th and heads south out of downtown. All Saints Day, November 1st. The Dusk Festival, November 9th and 10th. El Tour de Tucson, November 23rd. Made in Tucson, December 1st. And the 4th Avenue Street Fair, December 13th and through 15th. This is only a partial list. I know there's more events, but this is what was standing out to us when we're looking ahead. Have to say that the Rialto has a pretty good lineup coming up soon. Soul Asylum is coming to town, I think this Sunday. So anyways, the theaters always, you know, pack it in, and we're staying on top of the schedule and trying to adjust accordingly in our operation to meet the demands here. So those are just some of the festivals. I know Downtown Tucson Partnership, the emails that are sent weekly have a great summary of the weekend events and upcoming events as well. So we stay on top of that. Thank you, Zach, for keeping all the stakeholders informed in a very coordinated and communicative manner. That really helps us out personally. So thank you for that. And take any questions about the special events or any other report.
Thanks, Thomas. I'm sorry, my computer like crashed or something, which is why I switched to the phone. It just paused and then my mouse wasn't even moving, so I just switched over to my phone and I can't even get it on. But that said, I don't have the agenda with me, if you wouldn't mind.
Sure. Absolutely. If there's no other questions, Zach is going to answer, I think, your hands up just from the previous question. Unless you have another question.
All right, sorry, I'll pull it down.
No problem. Okay, so the next agenda item is online reservations of on-street parking spaces. I know we've talked about this before, but I wanted to give you guys an update on where we are with our new online reservation system, essentially. We're calling it curbside reservations, and this is the website. We just had a meeting the other day with our provider, IPS, to try to edit this website, try to, wash away any of the mistakes or issues. And we are planning a soft launch of this website this month, potentially as early as next week. We're going to pick 4 or 5 frequent curbside reservation requesters or customers to try this out on. And we're going to hold their hands through this process as they try it out. So just want to show you guys what this entails. These are a few of the permits that during the test we've applied for or paid for. So this is what a paid reservation looks like. In this case, it's a special event nonprofit. There's a location. In this case, it's on 4th Avenue. It has the dates and the costs associated with it, as well as the vehicle. And that's just what a permit might look like. In order to make a reservation, this is the process. You would select a location first, and then select your product. Residential leasing will be leaving the menu here. We're not going to use that as a menu item, but a few of these we do use. A special event nonprofit is a popular one. These are our rates. Typically, it's $9 a day, unless it's a special event nonprofit. $4.50 on the weekends. So you would go ahead and select a your menu item of a special event or nonprofit, and then you zoom in on our map here, and you can find a meter of your choice. In this case, I'm going to select this meter right outside the Sacred Art Tattoo Studio. Minimize that. So I've selected it. Here's my meter. I'm then going to, typically just, select the date range. I'll select a few days here. And then it adds up the costs. During the weekdays, it's $4.50. On the weekends, they're $3. It'll add up your costs. And then you go through the purchase process. You have to add a credit card to that. And I already have a vehicle entered in the system. You'd also have to enter a vehicle information. And then to prove that you're a nonprofit, there's an upload section for the 501c document, and you just go by. I didn't add a credit card here, so it's not going to let me go further. But that's essentially what it looks like. I wanted to talk also about the fees. There's a few fees involved as well, and what we did here is. Just want to be really transparent with what the IPS is charging for fees. And as we know, with most things you buy online, there are some convenience fees. In this case, there is a curbside reservation ongoing cost fee. This is 50 cents per day. Park Tucson, now we're going to pass some of these fees on to the customer. We're still debating which fees to pass on. The 50 cent fee is something we believe that right away we're going to pass on to the customer. However, we're thinking that might not be the best case because that's per space per day. So if you like a construction company, for example, may request 12 meters for a month, you know, the 50 cents per day would eat into our profit a lot. We probably pass that on to the customer. And then any portion of these fees, you know, we can pass on to the customer. There's a credit card gateway fee of $3 per transaction. So that's just one flat fee per transaction. And also IPS is hosting our merchant account. This is $1.50 one-time flat fee. So at a minimum, $4.50 would be passed on to the customer. And we're just having talks about whether to pass on the 50 cents or not. Maybe we would eat, you know, a portion of the hosting fee instead. So if you add that up, $4.50, it's the same price as one day of a meter, but it's only a one-time fee. So that's the fees structure. And this is all compared to what our current process is. This is our current process of how to reserve a metered space or a loading zone. There's some instructions on our website, and then you would click on here for the application. There's instructions. You email this to us, you know, fill it out, email it. There's back and forth between our office and the customer. It does take some time, and it is a little labor intensive. So we feel with this meter reservation system, it's going to automate a lot of the process. Park Tucson staff will have access to the back end of the website and be able to process that information quickly without going back and forth with the customer a lot. So we feel it's going to improve efficiency here at the office. And provide a lot of other benefits. So once again, ETA for that soft opening October, and we hope to have this fully in place in November. So we're excited about this, and I'll take any questions. All right, I see no questions. The next item number six, on-street food trucks. So on-street food trucks, that was requested to be on the agenda for today. I'm just going to get my notes. Stand by with me one moment as I pull up my notes. So regarding on-street food trucks, Park Tucson focuses on parking. We don't focus on a permit. Permits for food trucks are handled through code enforcement, another division within the Department of Transportation. We're out here essentially to make sure food trucks are parking legally within rules. So we do allow food trucks to reserve metered spaces. We do shy away from loading zones for food truck requests. We try to preserve loading zones for the neighbors. So we don't typically allow more than one truck per block. We've had bad experiences in the past when there are multiple trucks on one block. So our guideline is one truck per block. We only reserve up to 1 month at a time. Monthly requests must be made the month prior. So, for example, if it's, the last week of October, you can request for November. And we do calendar months only. We don't do partial months in advance. We do encourage them during the last week of the month to put their request in for the next month. And the customer uses the typical meter reservation application, which is the form I just showed you. And this is a first come first serve basis when it comes to the request. Also, I want to mention, food trucks are vehicles and they can park legally at meters. If they pay the meter rate, follow the rules on the signs regarding the time restrictions and locations. We only handle reservations. So if a food truck decides to park at a meter and they pay or after hours and they park on the street legally, that's okay with us. We don't typically do reservations on 4th Avenue or University Boulevard due to the number of businesses there, or on Congress, specifically on the streetcar side. We don't allow that, just too close to the streetcar. However, some side streets around 4th Avenue, University Boulevard are acceptable. We'll take a look at that and take that into consideration. But the online reservation process will also be used for food trucks. So that will also, you know, take a lot of the, you know, back and forth out of the process. So we do get food trucks as far as activity. JR, would you happen to know off the top of your head about, you know, how many food truck requests we're getting? I know we do have our regular customers that request them, but in terms of activity, how many food trucks are you seeing?
We probably have 7 or 8 active that we do reservations for. But within the last 2 months, we've had a large increase in requests. It's just we don't have a lot of locations that we will approve reservations for. So we are turning quite a few people away for reservations. But we have probably, I would say probably 6 to 8 every weekend that we do reservations for. We can't hear you, Tom.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I was talking away from the microphone, sorry. I feel the online system will take a lot of the back and forth away, and it'll help streamline this process. We've had encountered some complaints recently about, you know, hey, that food truck's been there for so long, it's always there. Well, that food truck, that customer is making the request per our guidelines, and we're approving it. So, you know, if there's another food truck that wants that spot, they have to request it in a timely manner, and we'll honor that reservation if it's not already reserved.
Looks like Joe, you have a question.
Yeah, I do. Hi, good morning, everybody. I don't know if it's a question or a comment, but, you know, my business is on 4th Avenue and 7th Street, and sometimes we like to have a food truck outside for events, and other times we don't, and it's really problematic for a food truck to work independently from the business it's adjacent to. Say, for example, I'm a bar, and if food truck comes up that doesn't clean up after themselves, they have a super loud generator, it's a problem, our door staff can't hear our customers coming in when we're, you know, checking their IDs and stuff, and I don't know how that can be addressed in this process. And then, like, for example, we did have an event, and this guy, we asked him to bring his hot dog cart, because it's not huge, it's not loud, he's, you know, a nice guy, it cleans up, and somebody came by and said he couldn't, that there were no food trucks allowed at all. Like, that he needed to be on private property or couldn't be, and it was a city person. He said he called them the food cops, but I think it was, I don't know who it was because I wasn't there. But anyway, I don't know if that's really a question or how, something to just maybe put in the hopper for consideration, you know? Because it causes unwarranted issues. And then, food trucks, I mean, everyone should have an opportunity to make money, absolutely, but it's a problem at 2 a.m. also, you know, the gathering and people hanging out, and I don't know, those are just my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Jill and Zach, if I may. So code enforcement, I heard, definitely did a little bit of enforcement. They went on a kind of a food truck / peddler enforcement operation. So I know a few weeks ago, a few of the peddlers and food trucks were asked for permits and things like that, just to make sure that they were following the rules. I believe, you know, generators are considered in the application process for that with code enforcement or electricity. Code enforcement definitely handles that aspect. I know code enforcement has a very specific guidelines for peddlers, and they were, those are going to be the smaller carts. There's a specific size that they allow, and there's a pretty lengthy application process for that, for peddlers, which are slightly different than the food trucks. I can definitely look into additional information through code enforcement regarding peddlers and food trucks. They do issue permits for food trucks in terms of operating, you know, making sure they're safe. Just that we handle the parking location and they handle the actual, you know, allowance or permit of the business. But like you said, Joe, one of the reasons we shy away from Fourth Avenue is exactly what you were talking about. It interferes with the businesses. But thank you. And JR, I don't know if you have any comments about that. If you do, great. But if not, we'll definitely take this into consideration. And thank you for your comment, Joe.
So a lot of times we will, if we have a specific, you know, Jill, if you're wanting a specific food truck in front of your business, we're open to that. If, you know, a lot of times we'll get people that'll say, hey, you know, Shay's Lounge would like this out in front of their business. And I'm going to ask for an email from you stating, yeah, you're okay with that. As long as I get that email from you that says, yeah, we want him there, then we'll go ahead and we'll approve that. Okay. It's just, we look at the businesses in general. You know, we have a lot of businesses that make complaints about food trucks, so we try to keep food trucks away from those businesses when we're looking at approving those requests. Outside of our parking restriction hours, because of the state law, we cannot do anything with them. The only, as long as they are abiding by all, you know, parking regulations, there's nothing that Park Tucson can do about a food truck. So if they're parked in the loading zone in front of your business on a Saturday and they're parked legally, unfortunately, I can't do anything with that. That'll change. Obviously, if we get our meter hours extended and stuff like that, then we're going to be able to regulate that, you know, more into the night and then on Saturday. But because of the state law, we can't regulate any of that at this point.
Okay, thank you. Like, for example, a guy with a food truck, you know, with a loud generator, stinky food, whatever, he asked if he could park outside, and I was like, I'd kind of prefer you didn't. Could you perhaps go across the street where there's not an open business that, you know, has alcohol, and there's, you know, we take security very seriously, and he was like, well, I can, you know, I can go wherever I want. I called the city, and they can't kick me out, and you know, I was like, okay, man, go ahead. Then, you know, we will not let people who buy your food come into the bar, like whatever, you know, like, I mean, I don't, what do we do if somebody that causes an issue does that? Cause I mean, like, it's weird. Cause in one breath it's like, oh, I would love to have a food truck sometimes. And other times like, no, thank you.
If you have specific concerns with, you know, if they're being, you know, they're leaving garbage, they're setting up tables in front of your business. Unfortunately, that's going to be a code enforcement issue. They're going to be the ones that handle that. They're going to come out and make sure they have all the correct permits, the Pima County health license and all that to run the food truck. They can't have any, they're not supposed to have anything on the sidewalks, tables, chairs, stuff like that. You know, code enforcement will handle that. They do kind of strategically, you know, you may call code enforcement this weekend. Code enforcement may not come out for 6 weeks because that's how they do their, you know, they don't work at nights very much. So they will do it, but it'll be more of a strategic thing where they'll get 6 or 7 code enforcement inspectors out and they'll hit downtown 4th Avenue. You know, they'll even do like the south side, you know, and when they do their food truck stings, I guess, they're pretty much covering all food trucks, making sure everybody has the correct permits to be able to do that. But unfortunately, it's a code enforcement issue. As long as they're parked legally, everything else with them, unfortunately, is code enforcement.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, if I could. I'm back on my computer now. if I could add, not to belabor the point, because JR...
Zach, I think your computer froze. Zach, we can't hear you if you can hear us.
point is not being belabored.
I'm guessing Zach is going to try to join from his phone again. And Zach, maybe we can hear you now. It seems like your status changed on the meeting. Okay, we're just going to give Zach just one more minute, and then we'll continue. Unfortunately, Zach's having some technical difficulties.
Okay, I had to switch back to my phone. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
I don't know what's going on with my computer. I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
I don't even know where I left off. But yeah, like you said, you know, this was on August 30th. This was from Biden with cities code enforcement, and this was after we just kind of went one business specifically. There's a more of a food cart that's attached to their vehicle that's parked directly in front of their business. And by directly in front, I mean within 10 feet of their entrance, and just parked there, you know, multiple Fridays or Saturdays, and then also putting out their own tables and chairs on the sidewalk, which I'm pretty sure you'd need your own permit for that through the Department of Transportation for any setup in the public right away. But they made, this was on August 30th. He said, I was out Friday and Saturday with the support of Sergeant Azula and Officer Aguilar from TPD. And they bring TPD with them because it can get a little emotional, they said. We did make contact with a vendor who sets up in front of the business. He moved to the corner of the sidewalk because his cart that he usually uses in the road was hit by a car and is damaged. Here's a summary of both nights. We made 21 contacts with street vendors throughout both nights. 12 were on the Congress/downtown district. 9 were on the 4th Ave district. Out of those 21 contacts, none had a peddler's license. All 21 were issued a warning NOV and ordered not to, I don't know what NOV stands for, or notice a violation maybe, in order not to return until they have a permit. It was a pretty successful night and really was more focused on educating the peddlers on the requirements, since most expressed that they weren't aware of the need for separate peddler's license. We are internally looking into how some vendors might be exempt from needing peddler's license, so more to come on that. So that's just what he sent me. I'll follow up too, and then I don't know if you're on that email chain, Tom, but yeah, if we can try and, you know, work together, and just that way we're all on the same page when a business, you know, complains or reaches out to you all and you aren't the correct people to field that complaint, you know, and we can loop code enforcement in.
Absolutely, definitely willing to work with you and the businesses to the correct department there, code enforcement, to make sure they're following all the rules. Absolutely. Definitely willing to work and continue the conversation on that.
Awesome. Thank you. And sorry again for my technical difficulties.
One of the questions on food trucks. The next item is public outreach and stakeholder engagement regarding proposed extended meter enforcement powers. We're getting really close here to issuing, I'm going to share my screen, a letter to residents and business owners regarding proposed extension to on-street meter parking enforcement hours. So as you know, the Park Tucson Commission approved the proposed extension of meter enforcement hours to Monday through Saturday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Currently, our meters are 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday only, and they're free after 5 p.m. on weekdays and on all day on weekends. So with the new proposed meter enforcement hours, meter parking spaces will remain to be free after 8 p.m. and all day on Sundays. No time limits will be in place after 5 p.m. So posted signs will designate paid parking between 5 to 8 p.m. So what that means, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., we have, for example, two-hour parking in place. And then after 5 p.m., it's just paid parking. So if a car is there, you know, at 5 p.m., they can just pay for however much time they want up to 8 p.m., and it's $1 an hour. We feel that this will help increase turnover and create some more revenue for Park Tucson. So pending approval from the commission, we plan to come back to the commission after some outreach. We plan to begin this in early 2025. There are no changes to the parking rates, no changes to time limits, no changes to how to pay for parking. And here is a QR code that we're going to be including in the letter. This is going to lead to a website that I'll show you here in just a moment. And we will be hosting two virtual open houses. Currently, we thought October 17th and the 23rd. I know that's coming up really fast. We were hoping to get a little more notice, and we're considering delaying the 17th, the first one. We might start with the 23rd, but I'm going to try to talk to my director today and see if we can get this out today and or on Monday and still keep October 17th date. We would still be accepting input through October 28th. So these are just information sessions, virtual open houses that our Tucson staff, I'll be on these meetings to provide information about the reasons why we are proposing the meter extension. And here's a website. We're going to go live here pretty soon on our website. So it just summarizes essentially what I was just talking about, the current hours, the proposed new hours, the purpose for extending the meter enforcement hours to increase availability for on-street parking. There is a pretty large background section here. We talked about Mayor and Council providing approval for us to initiate outreach back in 2022. We do mention that the commission chose the Monday through Saturday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. time frame. And we have a link to our curb management study. I'm not going to open that. It's over 200 pages. But it essentially is summarized here in these paragraphs. And ultimately, what we're shooting for is the 75 to 85% on-street parking occupancy during the later hours in the day. We know right now it's around 100%. And in that study, it lists paid parking as a tool to increase your availability of occupancy. So that's the tool that we're choosing to use. We will talk about the peer cities hours in the virtual meeting as well. And I did make just a couple small updates. There was a couple changes, but Tucson is the largest city by population that does not charge for on-street parking in downtown after 5 or on Saturdays. And there's going to be a link here to take a survey. So here's our little survey. It's very simple. We're going to ask who you are. And then we're going to ask you from 1 through 5, are you in favor of extending the hours? And comment section. So just a box here to enter comments or questions. And so we'll be tracking that. And we have a list of frequently asked questions here on our website. And these are going to be the two links for the two meetings. One on October 17th, if we're still on schedule for that, and also for October 23rd. So unfortunately, before the October 22nd commission meeting, I won't be able to come to you with a lot of comments. Hopefully we receive some, but we just kind of ran out of time before the October 22nd meeting to get this up. So that is what our plan is. We do want to send this letter out to as many stakeholders as possible. And we'll take any questions about the proposed extended parking meter enforcement outreach.
Thank you, Tom. I'll start them off. More just comments that this is awesome, just having this webpage with the background, all of the information needed, and just the timeline. And it's just user-friendly, too. So I just wanted to comment and let you know, and I know I already said this before, but we'd be happy to send it out to our businesses, stakeholders, property owners, email lists, and then I can even do some targeted emails to our downtown residents, our property managers who manage these large apartment buildings, so we can do that. And then I'd encourage, I know Zach said that Metro Chamber could probably send it out through their stuff, and then I'd encourage you. I mean, I know Casey's not on here right now, but I'm sure she would send it out to all those merchants, and then anyone on the 4th Ave Coalition if they have an email list, and then Alexis on Main Gate, and Mercado, Kira could probably help you with that one, so. Here to help.
Thank you so much, Zach. I definitely will send it to all the folks you just mentioned. We did have a meeting with Mercado a couple weeks ago, talking about installing meters, and we mentioned the meter enforcement our plan. We're hoping to get those meters installed in Mercado winter time, hopefully around January 1st, maybe sooner. So they're doing a final walk around of Mercado to determine exactly where our meters and pay stations will be installed. And that'll be probably the first area that will receive the new extension of hours, followed by downtown and then 4th Avenue. We've promised 4th Avenue not to do any changes until after downtown Lynx is complete. Downtown Lynx estimated time of completion is now March of 25. And for the Main Gate area, we definitely want to do this during a break in the semesters. So I'm not sure if we're going to get to spring break. It's more looking like a June time period, late May or June after the school year has ended for that. But with Mercado, they asked us to do a specific town hall or meeting with their merchants. I definitely agreed to that. We just have to schedule that. So we'll do another focus. Outreach for Mercado, and Zach, I'd be more than happy to attend a merchants meeting at Downtown Tucson Partnership when if that's appropriate for the next month or two. I'd be happy to do that. So
okay, the last one was abruptly canceled. The leadership change obviously was not something that was expected, so we had to cancel. But yes, I'll reach out to you because I think we're trying to reschedule that for the last week of October sometime. So I don't know if that will be too late by then, but I'll email you, Tom.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
We can't hear you again, Tom.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, definitely. We can extend the outreach period as well if we need to. One of the restraints is ordering signs. We know our sign shop does have quite a backlog for signs, so it's going to take a while for them to create these signs. We're talking minimum of 500 signs that we have to get ready, if not more. So that's really, you know, in terms of executing this, it's a lot of it's based on the signage as well. Once again, sorry for the delay in getting all this organized now. We just really wanted to have our ducks in a row to make sure we're doing this correctly. And I'll definitely come back to the full commission with any comments received. Just looking forward to this and getting getting this going. It's been a long time coming, and we'll definitely keep you updated. Any questions on parking meter enforcement? All right. I don't know, Zach, if you have the agenda up or you need to, I'll do it.
My screen's just frozen, okay. But giving me some like light, I guess. I know. Yeah.
The next item is future agenda items.
Okay. Anyone have any future agenda items? Hearing none. Okay. 9:23, we stayed under an hour. We can adjourn. Well, thank you so much, Tom, and everyone, and JR, for all your work. And I hope you guys have a nice weekend. And everyone else, thank you for being on the call.
Thank you,
Zach. Thank you, everyone. Have a good weekend.
Bye.